Its current state on WKAR, according to a new report by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, a global policy think tank, 40% of the world's population will live under severe water stress by 2050. While the Great Lakes region is water-rich, the report suggests that even water-wealthy areas should work toward adaptive policies to secure fresh water's future. Kathleen Bresnahan-Dominique is an environmental economist at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and she's author of the publication Water and Climate Change Adaptation, Policies to Navigate Uncharted Waters. She spoke with current state's Emmanuel Berry from OECD's studios in Paris about how climate change can also be described as water change.
Water is a big part of the story of adaptation. The water is the main way we're going to feel the impacts of climate change. It's going to be more floods, more droughts. It's going to be changing rainy seasons. It's going to be melting glaciers, changing snowpack, impacts on water quality, and so on. Water is also a big part of successful adaptation. Extreme events are a major concern, and that's where some of the most costly impacts will arise. So those are more intense and frequent droughts. So not enough water, and that's also more intense and frequent floods in some cases, so too much water.
A lot of climate change policy deals with mitigation rather than adaptation. You know, we implement policy after the fact. We don't take preventative measures. What are the benefits of taking a more risk-based approach or adaptive approach to climate change policy?
Well, you're really right about that, Emmanuel, that this report really makes the case for acting proactively. It really has a strong call for governments to take account of the compelling and building scientific evidence around climate change and taking action ahead of time and not just in the wake of disasters. There's a strong economic case for looking ahead into the future, dealing with current challenges, but also looking ahead and seeing what climate change will pose as additional challenges and making better decisions. So a really concrete example of that is thinking about spatial development decisions or land use planning that happens at local level, may also be conditioned by regulations at state level and so on, to encourage people to settle away from floodplains, to make sure that there are not incentives for property developers to continue to develop in areas that are highly exposed to risks of flood. It also has important message for our infrastructure design, water infrastructure, so whether it's sewage, it's dams, it's pipelines, water supply systems, are very long-lived. They last for decades, can last up to 80 years, 100 years, depending on the type of infrastructure. So we need to make sure that the infrastructure we're designing and building today is going to be able to deal with a climate that may look very different in the future. And thinking about that early on is going to save us a lot in terms of costly retrofitting or possibly having to rebuild and redesign infrastructure that will be mismatched in the future.
The report also gives a lot of examples of areas that are already using, are trying to use adaptive based policies or are thinking ahead. Can you think of any in the U.S. in particular that stand out as being innovative?
Yeah, I can think of actually there's two great examples in the U.S. Well, there are many great examples in the U.S. Two that come to mind include the Hurricane Sandy Rebuilding Task Force. So this is an excellent example of trying to think ahead, to avoid or reduce costs of future disasters. This was established by executive order in December of last year. And the idea behind it is to build on lessons learned during previous disasters, where experience has basically showed that planning for the long-term rebuilding needs to start even as a response to disaster is ongoing. So it's not just thinking about rebuilding things exactly where they were, how they were before a disaster struck. It's thinking about what makes sense in terms of resilience for the long run. And they've done some great work and come up with some innovative policy recommendations to help build resilience to future storms. And this also serves as a model for other communities. Another example on the other side of the country is with regard to the Colorado River Basin. And several years ago, in response to concerns about historic drought, basically a drought of a severity that hadn't been experienced in modern history, the U.S. Department of Interior launched a process to get together with all the stakeholders in the basin and the major states that are concerned in the Colorado River Basin to develop guidelines to think about what a future of lower flows and potentially longer droughts is going to look like, and then how all of the parties can share the consequences of either normal flows or surplus flows or shortage flows. And this is really important because it's a forward-looking process that takes into account long-term climate change and asks how we can share the risks and also the benefits among all the parties concerned. And this is the type of action that's really important in terms of developing good adaptive responses.
Now, a little bit closer to home, as you mentioned, three of the major concerns are, quality, quantity, and extreme events. And here in the Great Lakes region, we are concerned about quality, although it is not so much adaptive, but kind of an after the fact. And we haven't had many extreme events. We've beyond low lake levels. And as for quantity, I feel like a lot of people in the Great Lakes region in the basin seem to think that, it's endless in some ways. It looks like an ocean. How could we ever not have this water here? So in a water-rich region like the one we live in, why should we make an effort to manage our water with adaptive strategies?
That's a really good point. A lot of times when we observe present conditions, we think there's enough water, we'll always have enough water. But what we see with climate change are also changes, not just in terms of water availability, but also the timing of when that water is going to be available. So in the case of the Great Lakes, for example, you're a very water abundant context. Water quantity, availability of water might not be the primary concern, but reduced water availability in the summertime, for example, could have negative impacts on agriculture or reduce the output for hydroelectric plants. It also has an effect on the levels of on water levels in the Great Lakes. So water level decline, which is projected to be seen in a changing climate, might make some shipping channels too shallow for fully loaded ocean-going ships. But at the same time, we're also expecting to have reduced ice cover, which would help to extend the shipping season or make it possible for ships to cross the lakes when previously it wasn't possible due to ice cover. At the same time, of course, the discussion is not just about water availability, but also looking at the increased risk of extreme events. So we're expecting to see more intense rainfall events. And this can be a problem for sewers that can overflow. This can cause pollution issues in water bodies. It also can promote additional runoff and carry pollutants into water bodies. So this can also be difficult to deal with, and it can be very costly because it's very costly for cities to try to retrofit their sewage systems, which are not designed for such intense rainfall. So those are just a couple of examples of why even in a water abundant area, it's also important to pay attention to these changes because it can have a number of different impacts.
How does policies for adaptation, how do they differ in a water-wealthy region like what we're in than, say, like an area in the Southwest in U.S. that has a lot of stresses and more concerns about quantity? I guess, are there any major differences in those approaches for protecting our water?
There are some key differences in terms of the vulnerabilities and the impacts that you're focused on. In water-scarce regions, a lot of times the focus is on dealing with the risk of shortage. So what to do when shortage occurs, how water is going to be shared in those times of shortage, and reducing the economic impact of that shortage. In more water-abundant areas, we see these issues around heavy precipitation events. This can cause problems, of course, for sewage infrastructure, for overflows into water bodies that create pollution, etc., but also flooding events. So these might range from nuisance events where streets are flooded and people can't get where they're going. They can affect negatively transportation infrastructure, or they can be far more destructive, as we've seen actually all over the world. There's examples of intense flood events. In terms of the adaptation response, though, there are some key common messages, regardless of whether you're dealing with too much water, too little water, too polluted water. And that is the importance of being flexible and having policies that you can update and change over time, and making sure that when you're thinking about long-term investments in water infrastructure, when you're designing a sewer system or designing an upgrade to a wastewater treatment plant, that you're thinking about changes over a long time horizon. And this is just as important for areas dealing with the problems of shortage or the problems of excess.
Kathleen Bresnahan-Dominique is an environmental economist at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development and author of the publication Water and Climate Change Adaptation: Policies to Navigate Uncharted Waters. Kathleen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Emmanuel. It was a pleasure.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news on the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership. For Current State, I'm Emmanuel Berry.